Long before My Fair Lady, actually well over 100 years ago, there was George Bernard Shaw's Pygmalion, which of course inspired that musical. It's a classic story about the transformation of a rough around the edges young woman at the hands of an older refined gentleman. The first production of Pygmalion was in 1913. So let's fast forward 105 years, and the show is being produced in this century by the innovative Bedlam Theater Company. And its exploration of power dynamics between men and women seems as relevant as ever. The show's up through this Sunday, and we're pleased to have, I'm going to get this right, maybe not, Vaishnavi Sharma, who stars as Eliza Doolittle. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Eric Tecker, who not only plays Henry Higgins, but also directed as well. Nice to see you both.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So, Eric, Bedlam had been in sort of a Jane Austen groove for a while. What made you decide to go back to Shaw's work?
Well, Shaw was the first author that we produced. We did a production of St. Joan that was our first production. It ran for sort of off and on all over the place for a few years and still comes back. We did it at the McCarter last January, February, and it's out on tour right now around the country with Hamlet. And a lot of our fans had said they'd love to have us revisit Shaw, so this one felt like a good one to bring back. And so we workshopped it a couple of years ago just to kind of get into it, and this just felt like the right time.
For all the English majors who are trying to remember the difference between Pygmalion and My Fair Lady, can you just help us out?
Well, Pygmalion doesn't have any songs, for one. That's
yes.
The big one. And we're using the script from 1913 the first one that he wrote that is public domain. And there are some scenes that he added later, which ended up in My Fair Lady as well. So a lot of people have thought maybe we've cut things, but we haven't. We're just using the very first script. So, for example, there's no scene where he teaches her to speak English. That all happens off stage and some of those other things. I think a lot of people are surprised about how our play ends because it doesn't end the way My Fair Lady ends. My Fair Lady sort of softens it a bit where you think maybe she's going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what Shaw intended. He actually intended that she leaves and ends up with Freddie.
I took the subway after a show and I saw two women who were obviously just in the audience who were reading the end of the play off the internet on their phone to each other to make sure that we had not changed the ending.
That's so funny. What a great reaction.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so... one of the things that I thought about is your chemistry on stage is so great.
Oh, thank you.
That as a person watching, you're like, wait, they should maybe...
Right.
Maybe they should.
Right.
You know, and I think we've all been conditioned, a la Pretty Woman, to have this nice big bow on the end of all of our plays, and everybody's happy and falls in love. But that's not really what this play's about. It's not really a love story.
No, no.
Why did you think it would work in 2018?
Well, you know, when I first was thinking about it, it was a couple of years ago, and it didn't have anything to do with the Me Too movement or any of that stuff and the current climate. I think what's interesting about it is I think it works anytime. I mean, the sexual politics between men and women and gender issues and this and that, they're always here, you know? Mm-hmm. We're always trying to work out our relationship with one another, and I think Shaw's writing is so brilliant. It's so witty and cutting and smart that it always works. And it's incredibly funny, you know?
Yeah.
There are laughs throughout, just like St. Joan, just like all of his work, and everybody loves that. So I think it just works.
Vaishnavi, do you remember the first time you read Pygmalion or saw My Fair Lady?
I do. I definitely saw My Fair Lady before I ever read Pygmalion. I was a young girl. I think we used to watch three movies, that's the only tapes, video tapes they had. My grandparents up in the mountains in their beautiful cottage in India. And it was Sound of Music and this one in Parent Trap. And we just used to watch one of these three, depending on the night. And, you know, the music is so beautiful in My Fair Lady. And I think it was the music that probably... brings you in as a young person watching that film. And then, of course, that it is a romantic comedy love story and it's an easy watch. And maybe you don't see all the nuances of what Shaw was writing, which is, a lot of it is still very much in My Fair Lady, not to the extent maybe that it is in Pygmalion, but you don't see all of that stuff in the first watch, especially if you watch it when you're young. So yes, I remember watching it and loving it.
Eliza Doolittle is a character that I'm not sure that many young women of color think, I'm going to play her
definitely
one day,
not,
right?
Was not on my list.
Yeah.
No.
What did you think when you heard about the part being cast as an Indian immigrant from Delhi rather than a Cockney girl?
So the true version of that story is that Eric asked me to do, if I would be free to do Eliza Doolittle. And I said to him, the idea of Higgins beating an Indian accent out of a little flower girl is fascinating. So it seems like I'm the one who suggested it. I didn't realize at the time. I thought he was, in fact, asking me to play her as an Indian. But I'm the one who made that.
No, that's the truth. I was asking her. I've been trying to get her to do a play with us. She moved away. She's living in Florida right now. And I've been trying and had a baby. So I've been trying to get her back for a play for a while. Mm-hmm. And now that her child's just a little older, she could. And I thought, this is the perfect role for you, Vesh. Come do this. And then we started having the conversation of what does that mean for an Indian woman? And, mm-hmm. and she did bring that up. That was her. I just picked the actor first, and then the discussion came later.
Well, once you made this decision, you have to have discussions not just about class, but you have to have
yes.
them about race.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about those conversations, where you went to for information, research.
You know, in my head, it was all about the fact that in colonial India, the idea of the English language is so connected to class. It's how we place someone. As soon as they open their mouth and how well they speak English and what their grammar sounds like and what their accent is a direct indicator of how educated they are and how much money they have. And it's there till today. And if we were setting it in the time that it was written in 1913, that was, no one spoke English unless you spoke Queen's English. So for this girl to be able to, and of course she, you know, we've set it up where she lives, very much lives in London. So somehow she got there. But the idea of her learning English from an Englishman and then beating him at his own game was very exciting to me as an Indian woman that grew up in India with this, the language being something that defines you. Mm. That was my first in with it, with playing her.
What did you learn about this from Vesh as you were working on this?
Well, I think one of the things I learned was, I mean, I thought that the role obviously could be incredibly nuanced and have all kinds of depth and maybe even in ways that we hadn't seen because of the musical, but I think one of the things I've learned is just how deep and how nuanced it can be, because that's the kind of actor that Vesh is. She's that good that it's, you know, she's going to find colors you never thought of. Mm-hmm. And so that's been incredible. And I didn't at first want it to necessarily, I didn't want to change the story and make it about race, but I also think anyone should be able to play the role. And so we'll go where that takes mm-hmm. us.
We're speaking with Eric Tucker and Vesh Sharma. They're starring in Pygmalion, the Bedlam production on the Lower East Side. I think it's the Sheen Theater. It was interesting. The Village Voice review was glowing and had some interesting points. I'm going to read a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you won't mind. It said, this is a Pygmalion that may make you feel for Eliza as you have never felt before. As her father notes, Americans love to believe that they recognize and respect merit in every class of life, however humble. But we sure do see race. At the end of her lessons, a distraught Eliza demands of Higgins, what have you left me fit for? Where am I to go? What am I to do? What's to become of me? And we look at her, elegant, intelligent, poor brown, and think, oh no, it's the early 1900s in England. The whole culture is stacked against her. How does she get around that? That was such an interesting point to make, because it's sort of a little bit of the tragic mulatto you've seen in
yep.
literature before.
Yep.
Yes.
What's to become of her? In your mind, when you're playing it, what does she think is going to become of her? Is she truly at a quandary, or does she figure it out by the end?
No, I don't think she does figure it out at the end. I know that she, I mean, in the way, I can only speak for myself, I think at the end of every night doing this show, I think she knows in that moment that she will not be with him, mm-hmm. that she does not want to end up with him. And when she walks out of that room, she knows she means what she said, that she's leaving him. But I don't believe that she knows what's going to happen next. And I think that's part of her tragedy and her strength, that she is able to, without knowing what comes next, still stick to that decision to walk away from this man who is now saying, if you just stay with us, we'll take care of you. It may not be perfect, but here's an offer. Mm-hmm. And I think she knows it's just not enough for her. So isn't that a more interesting story to tell, that she doesn't know what's going to come, but she's strong enough to leave anyway?
It's interesting with Henry Higgins. There's a couple things that get repeated in the play, which I think are interesting. And Eliza tells him, you're no gentleman. You know, do you think he's a gentleman?
I think that he thinks he is in most situations, but I'm not sure that he's maybe just a little too self-involved. Mm-hmm. You know, he's one of these people that he's a kind of a scientist wrapped up with an artist brain who isn't able to function in society the way that other people do, that train for it. And I don't think he's interested in that. Mm. And so he can't help but treat people badly because he doesn't filter what comes out of his mouth like everybody else around him is doing. And you see that in the scene mm-hmm. with his mother, who's constantly saying, oh, you're not fit to, I can't bring you in to at home with my right. guests. And he doesn't understand why. So I don't think he doesn't get his own behavior until the end when he loses her and he mm-hmm. has to start looking at himself. So I think he learns a great deal from Eliza. He even says that he learns a great mm-hmm. deal from her in the play.
Mm-hmm. And Eliza's insistence, mm-hmm. I'm a good girl. Mm-hmm. She said so many times that mm-hmm. another character remarks on, why do you keep saying you're mm-hmm. a good girl?
Yeah,
why
I
is
do,
that
yeah.
so important? What does
a
good mean,
question.
I guess, at that time?
Yes.
What is that saying?
I think a lot of it is just literal. I think she means that she's on the street selling flowers, but she's not mm-hmm. selling herself. She's not she's not a prostitute. She doesn't, you know, she's the fact that she has these moral codes that she's unwilling to let go of to get mm-hmm. ahead in life. I think she wants him to know that she will not do something that she doesn't believe follows her moral code. And I think that's why she keeps saying it, because she doesn't know who he is and she doesn't know how society works. And in a way, they're well matched, because she also doesn't know how to exist in this new world that she's suddenly chosen to walk into. And I think she has to keep saying, this is me, this is who I am, and will not walk away
compromise,
from those.
Yeah.
Compromise, that's the word.
Yeah, it's interesting. She starts the play with a choice and ends it with a choice.
Yeah.
And it's when she loses her choice in the middle is when she's in huge conflict and everything doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's good. You always said that she makes the choice to go to his home and say, I want to learn mm-hmm. how to speak this way and this way. And that she takes her life in her own hands.
Eric, you directed this production as well. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the choices that you made in the beginning that you've had to tweak or change along the way, along the run?
Along the run? well, you know, I don't know that we've made any changes throughout the run that were big. I mean, what's wonderful about a run where at least you get several weeks is that you know, it evolves and grows mm-hmm. and deepens, hopefully, especially when you're working with really smart actors and who are, you know, maintaining the story but letting it grow. So things have grown and deepened. You know, not everybody, the first scene plays with everybody standing outside the actual space.
There's this funny moment when you go into the theater and the people at the top of the stairs are like, you got to go in a little farther. Mm-hmm. And people are sort of grouchy about it. Like,
yeah.
I want to stand in the hallway. It's a bunch of New Yorkers. Nobody, don't tell me where to stand.
Right.
And you get in there and it's a crowded street. And that's the point. You're
yeah.
supposed to feel like you're in a crowded street and then the production begins.
Yeah. And that, even with some of the grumbling,
we
didn't change that mm-hmm. because I think it's worth it. And you know, and then you don't end up sitting in your seats for so long.
Mm-hmm.
It's a plus that nobody knows till after they've maybe, you know, sat down.
And it felt very urban to me, because you've been in a train station and heard people having an argument and only been able to see one of their hats or the back of an ear.
Yes.
And it's in your life, even though you don't necessarily want it in your life.
Absolutely.
But you're still fascinated by what's happening.
Yep.
I want to talk about the production a little bit. A couple things that are interesting. The costuming is mm-hmm. really is terrific, and it seems like it's specific to your production of Bedlam, of Pygmalion.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yeah, very
especially
much.
Especially Eliza's.
Yeah, yes. Very much so. Charlotte Palmer Lane did the costumes. She's fantastic.
So brilliant.
And she's, you know, we've worked together before, so she sort of gets the vibe that, mm-hmm. that we go for, and she has her own, you know, brilliant design process. And well, you taught, and
also,
you
so
had conversations
exactly,
with her
so
about your own costumes.
Collaborative, where yep. she, before the first day of rehearsal even, we had a couple of weeks before, we had conversations, we exchanged photographs and texts about her ideas and my ideas, and she was very, very open to, you know, listening to my suggestions about or my ideas anyway about how she might dress and the hints of the Indian mm-hmm. inset and not making, and we did, we played with her wearing a full sari you know, in the first scene, and so she was, and she was down for basically anything, and we, when we tried on costumes, we tried different things, and we ended on, I think, wonderful pieces that had little touches of where, who she was and where she came from mm-hmm. without having that take over the story.
You are the two actors in the play that stay in the one character the whole play. But your other castmates, they switch back and forth. Men yeah. playing women, mm-hmm. One person playing against him or herself at the same time. Mm-hmm. As a director, what kind of direction do you give somebody who's going to have to play against themselves or suddenly be a man and then suddenly be your mom? The large gentleman plays your mom.
Yeah. Well, you know, people have worked with me before. We sort of have a rhythm about that in terms mm-hmm. of... But I also start... even though I've done several productions where we switch characters or where a small cast is playing a larger cast of characters, I try to approach it differently every time to see what we might find that's a different sort of storytelling language than the time before. And sometimes things are similar or you bring back old tricks. But I like to sort of cut away and try to boil it down to just what the actor can bring and use the most minimal amount of, say, prop or costume or and see if how much of it can be vocal or just their own energy and chemistry.
The physicality.
And physicality. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think if a person's sitting forward and sort of listening, they can follow it because mm-hmm. the text, you get it. You're looking mm-hmm. at two different points of view so a person can have a conversation with themselves. I also think audiences enjoy it. I think it's deeply mm-hmm. satisfying for an audience to see actors having a good time. And, you know, we're a small company, so every show can't have 10 to 15 actors. So we boil it down, but then you also can get all great actors because everybody's going to have something meaty to play. So that helps.
But add to that, when you're in the rehearsal room watching Eric attack a scene that has to have, you know, people switching mm-hmm. roles and talking to each other, what's fascinating is that he'll come in with an idea, but he doesn't come in with it figured out. He doesn't come in and say, here's what we're doing. So it evolves over the course of sometimes multiple rehearsal sessions and then finally you come to the thing that feels like it works. And sometimes, knowing Eric, he, you know, you do a show in front of an audience and he's like, this doesn't work, and we change it. Mm-hmm. And everyone's on board with that, and I think it's about that element of fun in the storytelling that yep. Eric is talking about, that everyone's enjoying it and therefore is willing to go along with it, performer and audience.
I'm curious about the audience because there's a little bit of breaking the fourth wall. Not tremendously. It's not like part of how the show works, but it happens occasionally. At one point, Eliza sort of tells mm-hmm. off Hingins, and you high-five somebody. The day I saw it, you hire somebody a high-five.
Yes.
That's
new. Yeah.
Has there been any sort of charming or funny or memorable audience interaction from the run?
Anytime I spot an Indian that I know speaks the language because I already mm. know them or I've heard them talking mm-hmm. to each other or something, I will add, is that being a bad actor? I add a line where I literally translate yeah. this one thing, and that's always gotten a nice mm-hmm. chuckle because it, you know, sometimes when you literally translate something into a different language, it makes no sense. Mm-hmm. And that was one that I did when my husband came to see the show on opening night, and he laughed so hard in my yes. face that I had to turn around and control yeah. myself because I broke. Three times he made me break that day. He's a good laugher.
He's a great laugher.
Can I ask what's next for both of you?
I go home to Florida okay. with my baby and have some nice family time.
Any more TV? People might recognize you from a Mr. Robot. Leftovers.
I don't know if I'm in the next season. I wasn't in season 3, so I haven't heard anything about that. And I don't know. I know that we're taking Pygmalion to Boston. That's what I know for now. And then, you know, I'm an actor. I audition and we'll see what comes
and
next.
And it goes on. How about for you as an actor or director and or director?
Well,
or Bedlam,
well,
whatever you want to share.
Well, it's all, you know, mostly these days I'm wrapped up in Bedlam. I mean, we're taking our production of St. Joan to Washington, D.C., to the Folger Theater in May and June.
That's
so
exciting.
That's next. And then we start rehearsals for our fall shows in mid-July. We're doing 2 shows in rep with 6 actors. And then we're doing, and then, of course, and then our Sense and Sensibility that we've taken many places is going out to Portland Center Stage in January. So I'll be getting that up just before we take Pygmalion to Boston and Costa Rica, of all places. And then,
fun. That's exciting.
You know, so that sort of thing. I'm working on a cool musical based on The Rivals that has a really great cast. And, you know, they're hoping maybe we can see how far that goes. Well, that's all I'll say. But
well, folks can still see you in Pygmalion.
Yes.
And folks can.
Until
I've been speaking
Sunday
with Vesh Sharma and Eric Tucker. They're starring in the Bedlam production of George Bernard Shaw, Pygmalion. It runs through April 22nd at the Sheen Center at 18 Bleecker Street. Thanks so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you.
Really
so
enjoyed
nice
speaking with you.